Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
The NBA's Nets are coming home to New York, more specifically to Brooklyn.
Is Brooklyn in the house?
They were recently the New Jersey Nets, but that's Brooklyn-born Jay-Z modeling the Nets' New Jersey during his concerts at the brand-new Barclays Center, where the Brooklyn Nets will now play. Jay-Z designed the team's logo, and he's one of the owners. Before New Jersey, the Nets were out on Long Island. They never found a home in Manhattan because the Knicks dominate there. But Brooklyn has been hungry for a team since the Dodgers left in 1957, and Brooklyn loves basketball. In 1973, Rick Tellender went to the borough to write about playground hoops for Sports Illustrated. He ended up staying for the next couple of years, producing the classic book Heaven is a Playground. He recently went back and joins us from WBEZ in Chicago. Rick, take us first, though, back to 1973. You say when you walked up the subway stairs at Newkirk and Nostrand Avenue, you walked into a passion play.
You know, I grew up in Peoria. I went to school in the Midwest, went to Northwestern University on a football scholarship. But I was fascinated by the entire idea of Brooklyn. And what I'd heard about it, it was just magic. It was some strange, exotic place, not that much different from Oz, in my opinion. And when I came up the subway there, and all of a sudden this life just appeared before me. The streets were vibrant. People listening to boomboxes as they walked along. This is before Walkman or earbuds. And then there on the corner, just past Nostrand Avenue, was Foster Park, asphalt basketball courts. But what fascinated me and what I heard the beat to was basketballs pounding on the cement.
Well, it was the heartbeat of Brooklyn, this pounding on the pavement. In fact, later in your story, you talk about how Brooklyn might have produced some of the best street basketball anywhere. And, of course, people say, well, they might debate that in other places they play basketball. But what was happening? I mean, how would you characterize what was happening?
One of the main things was a sociological thing that was occurring, and that was blacks were moving in from the other parts of New York City, from the South. There was a lot of stress, a lot of turmoil, a lot of crime, a lot of white flight. But it was bringing in this new form of basketball that hadn't been seen before. So Brooklyn was displaying this game that was just magical. The dunk was a huge part of the game, taking your man one-on-one. A lot of things beyond just winning the game were occurring on the courts of Brooklyn at that time.
Well, there's a documentary film called Doing It in the Park. It's a pickup basketball in New York City, and here's a clip from the trailer. Just gives us a sense of how important New York playgrounds in general and Brooklyn in particular were. Let's listen.
My most vivid memory ever is the first day I won on a 3-on-3 in the back.
Nothing is, you know, harder than playing in the playground.
I grew up playing playground basketball. When you got on, you tried to stay on the duration of the day.
I was down the other side.
By the way, Julius Erving there at the end. And so you go back to Brooklyn this past summer with some of the men who were characters in your book 39 years ago. There's Albert King. Albert King was this 6'6" phenom. He wasn't even in high school when you saw him on the courts.
14 years old.
Yeah. He went to college, was a college All-American at Maryland, drafted into the NBA by the Nets, the New Jersey Nets, of course. And now he goes back with you to Brooklyn because the Nets are going to Brooklyn. What was his excitement seemed palpable. Why? What was going on when he went back?
Part of the story, part of the mythology of playground basketball and street ball is that you will fail. You'll be lost to drugs. You'll be lost to bad decisions. And your peak will appear before almost no one on these courts. So it becomes almost like Paul Bunyan, like legendary stories of people dunking from the free throw lines or coming back to win games when they're down 10 points. So Albert was very aware of this. His older brother, Bernard, was an All-American at Tennessee and would go on to become a stupendous NBA player. But Albert, being young, he was already being recruited by colleges, and he was not in eighth grade yet. And all of his friends are these little guys that he liked to hang around with. But on the other hand, adults are treating him like the phenomenal basketball player that he was. But he didn't necessarily like that. And he would look at other players like the legendary Fly Williams, who for a time had been leading the nation in scoring at Austin Peay University in Clarksville, Tennessee, and he could see that Fly, he was not going to make it. And so Albert tried to figure out, how can I make it? How can I not step into any of these pits that are waiting for anybody who tries to make it through this? How am I going to avoid the use of me as just a thing, not as a human being? In fact, he even said that to me in that summer of 1973 and 74. People treat me like I'm just a thing, like I don't even exist as a human being. Yeah. So he grew up there. He loved playing basketball there. He was an incredible player. But also he knows now that he made it. He owns 4 Wendy's in New Jersey. He's been very successful. He's married. He's a terrific guy. And his joy, like, we're standing on the streets of Brooklyn, not far from the Barclays Center. And he grew up in Fort Greene, 3 blocks away, and he just screams out, "Brooklyn!" as loud as he can. Just out of, I mean, he couldn't stop himself. He felt this incredible sense of place and of having made it. That embodies a lot of what Brooklyn is feeling right now, all those 2.5 million people that live there.
Well, you mentioned Fly Williams, who's the cautionary tale. In your book, Heaven is a Playground, you call him a hero of failure. He did, Icarus-like. I mean, he flew too close to the sun. He did crash. But he has pulled himself together. He did go back with you. How does someone like him, who almost had it all but hit those landmines that Albert missed, how does he view the Nets now coming to Brooklyn?
He thought it was fantastic. He looks at his own life as similar to Albert, but in a big difference. And his is simply, I survived. I knew when I was writing that book that he was going to fail. And deep inside, he knew it too. It was like he had to fail. And then once he'd fallen to earth, maybe he could pick his way back up and become something like a normal human being, which he has done now.
So the new Nets coming back to New York, coming to Brooklyn this time, a team co-owned by New York real estate developer Bruce Ratner, Jay-Z, we mentioned, has a slice, and Russian billionaire Mikhail Prokhorov. Doesn't this speak to, though, the fact that it's a new Brooklyn? Brooklyn has been gentrified. Everybody's figured out it's hipper to live in Brooklyn than in Manhattan in many ways. There are all sorts of new enclaves, Russians, wealthy, well-off celebrities like Spike Lee, who lives in Brooklyn but is a diehard yep. Knicks fan. Is there still the opportunity for kids to play on these playgrounds in Brooklyn and maybe even make it to the Nets?
The playgrounds are still there for playing, practicing, but you'll be absorbed by an AAU team. You will be identified so early in your career, probably even by the 6th grade. It will make basketball far less fun. Talking with Albert about the days back when these kids would play, they wouldn't have to go to the bathroom all day long because no matter how much they drank, they would sweat it out. Their shoes, they would play in their shoes until they would burn. They would start to melt. The rubber on the bottom of those old Converse shoes would melt. So if you can survive all that, maybe you can make it to the NBA, but there might be a better chance of becoming a great rapper like Jay-Z.
I guess part of that question was more, are they still playing in the way that they were? And you said it might be more formalized in some parts, but you mm-hmm. meet up with kids and you say to them, do you play in the rain? Oh, yeah. In the cold? Yeah. Do you shovel the snow? Yeah.
I mean, basketball is a way to survive. The 13 and 14-year-old kids that I saw back at Foster Park, when I went back there 39 years after the first time I went there, they reminded me exactly of this ragtag team that I had that begged me to coach them, and they were called the Subway Stars. These new kids I met, man, we could have started up the Subway Stars right there on the spot and gotten T-shirts and done the same thing all over again, traveled around New York City via the subway, popped up at different parks, and played whoever was there.
Rick Tellender of the Chicago Sun-Times. You can read his Sports Illustrated story about the new Brooklyn Nets, which is really a story about the old Brooklyn playground basketball, at hereandnow.org. Rick, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.
And one last note. We talked about parents choosing their baby's gender earlier, and most of them choosing girls. We should add, parents love whatever they get. Just saying, for little ears. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now. All things must conclude. Take it out to the street that grows in Brooklyn. Among the steel and concrete. With all its glorious branches and leaves.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.